Let's talk more football. Of course, you can weigh in on the Phils and clinching the division last night at 215-592-9494. A lot of Eagles on the table as well, as Nick Sirianni joins us every single, typically Tuesdays at this time, 2 days removed from the game. And Nick is brought to us by Bud Light. You can pregame with Ava Graham at the Grog. Great spot, by the way. The Grog in Bryn Mawr this Sunday before the game versus Tampa Bay. And win tickets to the next Eagles home game and merchandise from Bud Light. We welcome the head coach of the 2-1 Eagles, Nick Sirianni. Good morning, Nick.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hi, Coach.
I'd like to start by saying congrats to the Phillies, Coach Thompson, and the Phillies organization for winning. The division yesterday was awesome. Got my kids wearing. I know my kids were wearing Bryce Harper shirts this morning. So,
nice,
awesome.
Pumped about that. Really excited for their run in this October.
Yeah, they've done 2 years in a row. It's been quite a journey and a lot of good, and until the end, obviously a lot of great stuff from them in October. Nick, let's talk about your squad. There's a lot going on, and in the midst of a win that has been very scrutinized in many ways, you guys got a win on the road against an undefeated team in a hostile environment with a tremendous amount of adversity, including some significant injuries before and during the game. What is that feeling of satisfaction like when you win a game under those circumstances?
Yeah, first of all, any game in the NFL that you win, you're ecstatic about. You always want to clean up the mistakes, but it's hard to win, so you take a lot of pride in that, and there's a lot of work, obviously, that goes into that. And that place... that place is a tough place to play. It's loud. It's a good environment. We had a lot of Eagles fans there, though. That was pretty special. But that's a tough environment to play. I think Howie told me a couple times that they hadn't won there since 2007 now. And I know last time I was at a game there was 2019 with the Colts, and we got beat up pretty good there. So anytime you go down there to get a win is big, and that's a good football team. You know, that had put a lot of points on the board, that had won games pretty convincingly the 2 weeks prior to that. And then just on top of that, getting the guys in to play, the backups in that had to come in and play, and stepping up to play, it was just a good team win. I said to the guys, there was a lot of things on display. How we handled adversity from the week before. We fixed a lot of the things that we had messed up the week before, and that's the big part of adversity. If you can take the adversity and get better from it, that's huge. And I felt like we did that while still having things to clean up. I felt like the roles, we always talk about what people's role are on the team, and to see some of these guys that you tell their role is to be ready when their time comes, and then they were ready, and they put the work in to be ready. That's an awesome feeling. And then, I thought we knew that team was tough, and we know we're a tough football team, and we went out there and played physically tough against a physically tough football team, and that was on display. And then the last thing on that game that you really think about is how much of a team that just felt just such togetherness on that football team. The offense, the defense saying to the offense, we got you. I mean, you should have seen, it was awesome on the sideline of how many times the guys was telling each other, I got you. Or if we have a failed conversion, they look at me and say, I got you. And it's like, it was just such good team football that team, this 2024 Eagles team, got tighter, a lot tighter just from that experience there. And we're going to continue to look back on this, not that you dwell on this because you move on, but it's going to be such a great example for other things moving forward.
Nick, the deal, the town's buzzing about some of the decisions from within the game. Let's talk about the first that, everyone's talking about, to not kick the field goal, or I'll say go for a higher percentage conversion on fourth down with a QB sneak. Ultimately, I'm going to ask you why not, but I'm going to frame it this way. 14 seconds left, and I would say, and I think most people would acknowledge, a quarterback that had been struggling up until that point in the game. So with those two realities, why not either just kick it or run the sneak in that circumstance?
Sure, yeah. We did what we did because we felt like it gave us the best chance to win the football game at the end of the day. We thought that if we didn't score on the play, we'd have another opportunity there. You know, we, you know, not to get into all the clock things, but we had a timeout. We had, you know, we've had some opportunities there on the next play if we were, if it didn't score. We've had a game against the Falcons in 21 where we scored with 9 seconds left to go in the half. We had a game against the Rams last year where we scored with, I think there were 6 seconds left to go in the half. We threw a fade and they passed interference. There was no time on the clock. And then the quarterback sneaked from there to get it. So we felt good about the play call that it had a chance to score. It didn't. So I fully understand the criticisms, and you know, if it scores, we're not talking about it. If it doesn't score, it's on me. And that's the price that you pay when you're the head coach, and I fully and gladly accept that because I know if you look at our track record in those scenarios, we've been pretty darn good, and it's helped lead us to a lot of wins. And so you got to stay, again, you take everything into consideration. And you know what? There's been some ones and some tight games this year that have been scrutinized because of the result. And that's okay. But every single thing I'm doing is trying to help this football team win. And you know, we've been pretty darn successful at it, but it didn't work this last week. So, you know, I gotta deal and live with the criticism.
Nick, when key players are out, you know, in certain moments, like obviously, you know, Devontae, you know, eventually AJ, Lane Johnson, does that make you more inclined to be aggressive because you think we may not get the ball down the field that often in this game?
Again, depending on how the game's going, is always taken into consideration. I thought our and sometimes what's taken into consideration, I think those are good points. Other things that are taken into consideration is how the defense is playing, right? You know, the defense was stuffing them, right? And so maybe you get a 7-3 lead. And then you just keep playing defense. But if you don't get it, the defense continues to play their butts off, right? And what's you know, like the fourth down, I think we had a 4th-and-2 early in the early in the first half that we converted. Like, you know, that you could say also there did take points there, but it's not talked about because you converted it. And that's okay. I mean, that's just the way it is. And so, you know, you do that for multiple reasons, and then one of them is, yeah, who's on the field? How many chances are you going to get going forward? How many times are you going to be down here again? How's the defense playing, right? And when the defense is playing that good, if you give them a little bit shorter of a field, you're feeling good that they're going to stop them. All those things are taken into play. Again, like I said, you take the analytical numbers, you take your players first and foremost. You take your players. Why are some coaches not aggressive in certain situations? They might not trust their players in those particular cases. I trust our players. I trust the guys that we have on this football team. I've seen them make these plays over and over and over again in our plus territory. And I don't remember what the stat was last week that somebody gave me, but it was like 79 times we've went for it in our plus territory. Well, that you don't do that unless you have ultimate faith in your players, right? And so you take all that into account. And again, but anytime something like that doesn't go right, you always look at it and you study it and you try to get better from it.
Nick, how often over the course of the game do you call the
play?
John,
we might have ran a fullback dive to you too if you've still been there. That plays out of the commission a little bit now. Like, I don't see a lot of teams doing that much anymore.
We ran one. I gained 1 yard, and I did a terrible job. My head was down.
And then the league said no more fullbacks.
No, I didn't deserve it, Coach. But my question was, how often over the course of the game do you call the play?
You know, I'm not going to get into this percentage of time. You know, the way we game plan is collaborative. Every staff I've ever been on has been that way, from when I was the quarterback coach to when I was the receiver coach to when I was the coordinator to when I was the head coach. It's such a collaborative effort. Mm-hmm. And you go through the week That's why football's so awesome. You go through this week-long grind for one game, and that it's so collaborative throughout. Well, that's how a game is too. You know, ultimately, Kellen is calling the plays and dialing up the plays so we can do, you know, so I can do other things. And you know, if there's a scenario where I say something that I want to go for it, do something. There's scenarios where Kevin Petullo, you know, our my assistant head coach and the pass game coordinator will say, hey, what do you think about this in this scenario? And Kellen will call it. You know, Jeff Stoutland has great suggestions. Jason Michael has great suggestions during the game. We have a lot of guys that have been coordinators and called plays on our staff.
Yeah.
And so you're getting that feedback constantly, and you know, it's thought out. It's like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, let's do that. Right in this particular case, you take players. You know, John, you know how it is. You go to the sideline and you say, hey, I'm feeling this ISO play because I know I can knock this guy on his ass.
Yeah,
right. And so,
for sure.
You know, you listen to players in those scenarios. It's such a collaborative effort. It's
true.
It's just like in a team in on the field. It's not, hey, Saquon scored that 65-yard touchdown. Way to go, only Saquon. Right. It's a collaborative effort. It took Fred Johnson on the backside leveling his guy. It took the receivers downfield blocking. You know, and that's the same way it's calling plays. So
yeah.
I won't get into the percentages of times. I'm never going to tell you when I called a play and it scored a touchdown. I'll always tell you when I called a play that didn't work.
Sure.
I'm always going to tell you that because that's my job as a head football coach, and that comes with scrutiny. And that's okay. That's my job. That's the job of leaders. That aren't the funnest part of the job, but it's what it is.
What changed in the second half of the Saints game for our quarterback? It felt like there was a difference. Like it was smoother. Things were more successful. Jalen, his performance in the second half. Why did it feel more even?
Yeah, I thought that the game he just saw it well. I thought he just saw it well, and was delivering the ball to where it needed to go. You know, playing, throwing hots off of blitzes.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Like, it's the way it goes. Like, he's going to get blamed for the interception because it goes on his stat sheet. But there's a lot of things that go into that. And so, he's got to put two hands on the football when he scrambles. So that fumble was on him, and he'll be the first one to tell you that. But when you have, I thought he was smooth throughout the game. I thought he was in complete control throughout the game. But I do understand that, you know, when you have those two blips on there, regardless of what the circumstances were, it's going to appear that he wasn't. But I really did feel like he operated well in that entire game.
Hmm.
It was, you know, we'd stalled out in the red zone a couple of times, you know, all these different things. But I thought he played, I thought he saw the field well. I thought in that 2-minute drill, what poise to deliver that ball to Dallas, and the guys did an unbelievable job execute Jahan Dotson. Jahan Dotson doesn't get the stats that Dallas Goedert gets on that catch, but his detail on the play,
sure,
absolute perfection. It was perfection. What's also not, if you go back and look at that play, Johnny Wilson gets a release.
I love Johnny Wilson.
Johnny Wilson, he gets this release on the play. He gets a release on the play that kind of spins the defensive back up, and the defensive back has to hurry up and catch up to him. Well, sometimes on that play, that guy falls off that play and makes that play for a 15, 16-yard gain. But Johnny beat him so good off the line of scrimmage that it pulled the guy in so far that Dallas was able to run. So, again, I know you asked me a question about Jalen, and I thought he was complete control on the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some unsung heroes. The offensive line, they're not going to get the credit. Sometimes the offensive line, they get the credit only when you only get talked about the sacks given up. Their protection on that play was awesome. And the throw by Jalen was awesome. Sometimes that ball's behind a guy. You know, I've seen other quarterbacks put that ball behind them, and he can't, like, really get going with that steam, that full head steam of gas, whatever that's called.
Sure.
How's that phrase?
Yeah, the
you
momentum.
Know what I'm talking about. Yeah, and so many things went into that play that put us down there. And then you get down there, and then look at that next play. Offensive line did a great job of just bowling off the ball, and then Grant Calcaterra lays his body on the line on the slice block on the defensive end, puts Chase Young down, and is laying on the ground in pain, but with his hand up in the air like number one. Isn't football freaking awesome, guys? I mean, it is awesome. I love football, and I love to just rehash that, how that game went, and just what a team effort it was to get that ball in the end zone at the end of the game.
Nick Sirianni here. Two final things, Nick. Number one, Devontae, the hit on him. Are you more annoyed with the Saints player that hit him or with the refs for not blowing the whistle? He catches it at the 36. He's not struck until the 31 by that additional defender. What annoys you more there?
You know, I obviously am just feeling for Devontae that, you know, he got hurt on that play. I know this, that guys, everybody knows, like, that this is their livelihood. And I don't think for 1 minute that the referee or that player on that team trying to do that, I don't. So I don't want, I'll never question somebody's integrity because everybody's out there laying their lives on the line to, you know, for the game that they love. And so I'll never question anyone's integrity on that. All I can say is that, you know, I'm glad Smitty's feeling good and that, but it was brutal. It was hard to watch. It's a hard thing to watch when someone, you know, I love Smitty on this team, love Smitty. He's the toughest guy. He is the toughest guy I know. Forget pound for, you know how they say pound for pound. Mm-hmm. He's the toughest guy. No, he's just the toughest guy I know.
Wow.
And so I love him. And I just, you know, I obviously feel bad that happened, but I'm never going to question somebody's integrity in that.
Nick, final thing. I know you're not going to tell us about injuries moving forward, so I'll just move on. We'll see who plays on Sunday. But I'll ask you this about trying to prevent injury or wear and tear. Saquon, through three games, has 73 touches. If you extrapolate that for 21 games, which is what it'll probably take to win the Super Bowl if you don't get a bye, he's on pace for 511 touches. 511. Do you feel you need to dial him back a bit?
Well, I think I don't remember where I said this. I do a lot of media, so I don't remember if I said it here, if I said it in a production meeting, if I said it, you know, wherever I said this. But you do everything you can do to win each individual game, right? Can you imagine if we didn't give them the ball as many times as we did and we lost? You know what I mean? I think about how that would feel.
Right.
Like, oh my God, we didn't give Saquon. We tried to pull back on Saquon to rest him for the 21 games like you're talking about. And we lost the game. Well, you better win the game.
Yes.
You better win the game. And that's our job every single week. So the way I look at it, guys, is we'll do whatever. If Saquon needs to carry it seven times to win because we got to throw it a bunch, then that's what's got to happen. If Saquon's got to carry it 50 times to win, then we'll give them to him 50 times. Where we can make up for that is in practice. You know, Saquon, how you feel? Talking to Saquon, how he's feeling, pulling back on him in practice, so that way he's completely fresh. You know what? We got a bye coming up. We got a bye coming up, and I just went down the hallway of our coaches and say, "Hey, you got a couple days off next week. Give me everything you got this week." And I'm teasing. They give me everything they got every single week. But we got a bye coming up, and you know our job is to win this game without by any means necessary. All I'll say is this, Saquon's a heck of a football player. I'm glad he's a Philadelphia Eagle.
Nick, good luck versus Tampa Bay. We'll be watching and look forward to talking after it's over. Thank you, Nick.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Coach.
There it is, Eagles head coach Nick Sirianni.
You sit in traffic now, but later there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste because you know all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome back, Midday Show. Hugh Douglas, Joe Giglio, you guys with us. 215-592-9494. A lot of debate today Sirianni, Jalen, bigger concern moving forward for the Eagles. They are 2-1, though, which is the good thing. And a big-time defensive performance to show for it on Sunday against Saints. Let's talk about that and the decision-making of the head coach with our next guest, Kyle. Seth Joyner set to join us.
Yeah, and Seth's sponsored by Bet Parks Online Casino and Sportsbook pre- and post-game with Seth Joyner at Parks Casino for every Birds game all season. Must be 21 in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, or Michigan. Gambling problem, 1-800-GAMBLER.
Seth, how you doing today?
Seth!
What's happening, fellas?
Well, you know, just a lot of, you know, nonsense and craziness at WIP, as always. Seth, let's start with the good from Sunday. The defense, they answered the bell, Seth, for the first time this season. What was different after you watched it, the way they played specifically up front this week?
Well, I think that, I think Hugh will tell you from experience that, you know, pride can be, you know, a motivating factor. And it can also show that the lack of motivation. I think that Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter had enough of us talking crap about them all last week and set out to prove, you know, what they have. And now that we know what they possess, it's up to them to show up and produce it every single week, because this defense will only flourish to the point that they dominate. Because we don't have outside pass rush, so they're going to have to dominate on the inside, and they're going to have to take away the run. And if we can do that, if they play like that, that allows the linebackers to get downhill, allows the safety to fill gaps. You're not running sideways. And then it also helps the pass rush because, you know, even though you don't have premier pass rushers, you know, you put the offense in a more predictable, you know, position, which then allows the defense coordinator to be a little more creative.
When you talk about those outside pass rushes, Seth, what are you seeing from the guys on the corners, in particular Bryce Huff? What have you seen from him so far?
You know, I just put a post up a little while ago because I was thinking about it. You know, you remember back in training camp when Vic said, you know, well, you know, he's coming along, he's learning how to play the position?
Mm-hmm.
That just clicked in my mind like an hour ago I was thinking about it. And I'm like, how do you pay $53 million to a project?
Mm.
And then when you think about it from the standpoint of the Jets, okay, the reason why, and I saw a tweet where this somebody said that he's playing less this year than he did last year for the Jets. What I started to think about it, I'm like, well, the reason why he wasn't playing for the Jets is because he's incomplete. You can put a guy in that's a pass rush specialist on obvious passing downs and let him go. But if he got to get in there, he got to rerun a pass on first and second down, you know, a third and short situations, he's a liability.
Mm.
Well, the Jets just pushed him on down the 95 and sent him to us. And he's still incomplete because in reality, don't get me wrong, we saw him set the edge a couple of times. But as far as being able to play on a consistent basis, he's too incomplete of a player. Mm. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. Vic was saying all training camp, what he's learning, you know, he's learning how to play the position. You know, he's got to figure out some things. And I'm like, damn. I wish somebody would have paid me $53 million to learn.
To learn, like learn on-the-job training? Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Well, you're not the only one. I'm sure everyone would love that setup. Unfortunately, we got to deal with it, and so does Vic Fangio. Seth Joyner joining us here. Seth, through three games, Eagles are 2-1, but there's some questions about both the head coach and a lot of those with the decisions he's made and the quarterback, considering he has 6 turnovers so far. Seth, when you look at it, bigger concern rest of the season, is it Jalen's play, specifically the turnovers, or is it the decision-making and the in-game stuff with the head coach, Nick Sirianni?
Yeah, Joe, I just seen the WIP tweet. I don't believe that. I don't believe that Jalen's the problem. I believe that Nick 100% is the problem. You think about it. It hasn't been pretty, but Jalen has given his football team the opportunity to be 3-0 if you really stop and think about it. And all the turnovers and everything that went wrong, he kept battling, and he put this team in position to be 3-0. It's Nick Sirianni's decision-making that cost the Eagles, you know, the Falcons game. And almost cost them the Saints game. So I'm more worried about him interjecting into the offense and trying to prove his worth as a head coach because he doesn't have the play calling, you know, duties, and he doesn't have any say as to what goes on the defensive side of the ball. So he's trying to prove to Jeffrey and Howie, you know, hey, there's some validity here. He's trying to put his imprint on things. And he needs to just step back and let Kellen Moore do what it is that he's been brought here to do and take the pressure, leave Jalen alone. So I'm not worried about Jalen. Even the turnovers, yeah, they're an issue, but I've been around football long enough to know that, you know, things come in droves. You know, Hugh will tell you about pass rushing. You know, sacks come in bunches. You'll go through dry spells and all kinds of things where you don't get sacks, you don't get tackles, you're not productive, and all of a sudden the floodgates open and boom, everything starts to, you know, go your way. So I know it's been a long sample size because you go back 7 games last year and through the first 3 this year, you know, he's just turning the ball over at a clip of about two turnovers per game. But I believe at some point in time the tide's going to turn and it's going to go in the other direction for Jalen. I can't say that for Nick because Nick is caught between a rock and a hard place where, you know, he's been rendered powerless. The only decisions that he can make is, you know, do we go for it? Do we kick the field goal? Do we punt? So now, you know, if you're the head coach and you don't have any power, how do you interject yourself into the game? You do that by making the nonsensical decisions that he's made over the last 2 weeks. Second series last week, you've got to take the 3 points, okay? Got an opportunity before the end of the half this past week. You got to tie the game up. You come out after halftime. You go 10 plays, 37 yards. You in position for the field goal to tie the game. You decide to go for it. Jalen gets sacked on 4th and 3. Then you try Jake Elliott out there to kick a 60-yarder when you should have taken the other 2 chip shots and been up. Now, think about the psychology of what's going on with your players when they see we went 15 plays, 78 yards. We went 10 plays, 37 yards, and we got absolutely nothing. There's a psychological side to this game that Nick Sirianni is detrimentally hurting this football team with. And he's got to step out of the way and let these players play and let these coordinators do what they're supposed to do and reap the benefits of it all.
Seth, if this continues with Sirianni, let's say we play it out this Sunday, similar kind of thing, and they leave points out there or he screws something up, do you think the players are going to start questioning him or losing faith that he knows what he's doing? Do you think that is on the table here if this continues to happen? Will they lose faith in him?
Well, listen, Joe, the players are front row and center. Players know who the players are, and players know when coaches are good coaches and when coaches aren't, okay? So now, I don't believe there's going to be a mutiny, you know, but I do think that at some point in time, you know, Jalen's going to have that conversation with Nick if it continues. Because, I mean, you don't understand that the confidence level, and everybody talks about, well, you know, these coaches, this is what they said, which is a bunch of BS. Well, you know what? You know, I just wanted to express confidence in my players. That's why we went for it on 4th and 2 there. No. You express confidence in them when they made the 53 damn man roster, not by you going for it on 4th and 2 and not getting any points out of it. That's a bunch of BS. You know, so you don't do it that way. You express confidence in them by taking the 3 points and having the offense feel good about themselves that they got something out of the long drive and count on your defense is playing out of their minds that they're going to get the ball back to you in good field position and that you're going to go down and score the next possession. That's expressing confidence in your football team. So I don't know. I don't know who the voice of reason is. I don't know whether Howie walks from downstairs with his analytics guy and they make a decision that they're going to roll it back a little bit. But I don't see it stopping because this is the mindset of people who live by this whole analytical thing, that this is what the numbers say and this is what we should do. Well, I think he went off the farm last week in those 3 conversations because there's no way you can tell me that the analytics guy said on 4th and 1 with 15 seconds left on the clock and from the 15-yard line that you were supposed to go for, there was no benefit. You had to stop the clock, which will only left you 9 or 10 seconds. You got 1 play to throw in the end zone, and you're going to take your quarterback who's been turnover adverse and put him in that situation? No, you made that decision on your own, Nick Sirianni. You even made the decision to run the fake tush-push, you know, Saquon Barkley run. He made that decision. So he needs to step up and own that and stop avoiding that. But at the end of the day, he better do something, Joe, because to your point, you know, the players see it. And the players are going to get more and more pissed off. And when he starts costing them more games, then it's going to become an issue for him.
Yeah, there's no question. Seth, we appreciate it as always. Have a great week. Enjoy the Tampa game, and we'll catch up next week, Seth. Thank you.
Have a good one.
Got it, fellas.
There we go. Seth Joyner there. Coming up, your phone calls, 215-592-9494. Hurt Sirianni. Bigger concern moving forward. All right, we heard from Hugh. We heard from Seth on Nick Sirianni. But what about the current players? What are they saying about Nick? We'll hear from Goddard, Brandon Graham, what they are saying about Nick Sirianni. 215-592-9494. That's how you join the Midday Show. A lot to discuss on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
WIP Afternoon Show, Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Every Thursday at 4 o'clock, our friend Mike Lombardi joins us, GM Shuffle Podcast, the Daily Coach, VSiN Morning Show. How are we feeling, Mike?
We're good. How you doing, Skip? Ike, good to hear from you. Everything good?
Did you just call me Skip?
Ooh, boy.
I said Spike. I'm sorry.
Well, that's
all right. I'm sorry.
Do you want to know a funny thing? Angelo called me Skip for like a year and a half when I worked here. Even after I told him it was Spike, he kept calling me Skip.
No. Well, you know what? We tend to have a little bit of those old lapses. You know how that goes.
Yeah, I'm getting there. After 40, every year, I forget more and more stuff. So we've been talking this week, it actually in large part because of a couple of quotes that Nick Sirianni said about sort of his role in calling plays. And it was... I think a lot of people in the offseason had the impression that during the game, it would sort of be Kellen Moore's ship to steer, and that Nick would not be involved very much at all. How realistic is that? Like, how much input in general would you just expect Sirianni to have, and how much conversation would he and Kellen Moore have about what plays to call and when to call them?
Well, I think, first of all, he's managing the game, so he's got to stay ahead of the game. And so, like, when they get into a situation, say it's 3rd and 8, and they're on the fringe of whether they're going to go for it or not, which we know he's always going to go for it, so it really doesn't matter. He's got to tell Kellen on the 3rd down call, look, I'm going for it on 4th down, whether you get a yard or not.
Right.
Or I'm not, and so he's got to tell him that. The other thing he's got to do is looking at the clock, and say, look, stick a run in here. I want to run the ball. I want to work the clock here a little bit to make some time. Kind of manage the game through the play calling. And I think he's not saying let's run X play or let's run this play. And he may say that based on practice. Look, we ran this play. We're getting that. Look, don't forget to call this. But I think it's more about just kind of helping the play caller along with the game management and trying to tie the calls to the clock to allow you to then best utilize the clock to your favor. I think that's most important. When he called the pass to Barkley, that had to be a call that the head coach had to approve, because if it's incomplete, he's the one who looks bad, not Kellen Moore.
Okay, so then I guess beyond that, would you expect, if he was involved beyond that, I guess sort of more integrated into the down-to-down call, that wouldn't be something you would expect or something that Kellen Moore should be dealing with?
No, he's not managing. Since Nick doesn't run the team, doesn't call plays, Nick's managing the game.
Okay.
And that's what makes him some of his decisions so strange. He's in a field goal game and he's turning down field goals, right?
Right.
Like, to me, he's watching his defense 2 weeks ago against Atlanta and he's still going for it. See, part of it is this applied analytics that has to be what is going on with the game. And the only way you can do that is to judge from the head coaching chair. His job is, now that he doesn't call plays, is to evaluate the first quarter to see if what he thinks was going to happen in the game actually does happen. And then the second and the third quarter, he's got to be able to see what adjustments his team needs to make to be able to execute. And then the fourth quarter becomes a standalone game where he's telling the coaches, Vic, and Kellen Moore and the special teams guys, hey, here's what we need to do at this part of the game. If that's your role, and if you're the head coach, you're not calling plays, then, you know, we can get a robot to stand on the sideline and say, go for it on fourth down. So he's got to have some more involvement than just that.
Okay.
One more thing, just based on another answer he gave. Typically, how many people during the week would be involved in offensive game planning?
Well, I think everybody, it's broken down. So you have certain coaches that may do the short yardage and goal line. Probably the line coach does short yardage and goal line. He coordinates the whole run game. You know, and then I'm sure the receiver coach and the quarterback coach, they probably all get together and have an influence on third down. High red, low red. You know, and then I think first and ten, somebody has a role. So they split everything up into duties, and then they all come together based on the day of what they're planning to put together their ideas. And Moore has the final say. I like that. I don't like this. I think we should do this. And naturally, Sirianni's got to sign off on it, too, if he's the head coach. You know, hey, look, I really think we need to do this against this team. I really think we need to do that against this team. But I'm giving you this information from Belichickian program. That's what I know. And
sure.
From the Bill Walsh program, from what I know. I don't know what goes on in Philly, but I know from working for two of those head coaches, that's what they would do. George Seifert ran the defense, but he would run by Bill and say, this is what we're going to plan, this is what we're doing, and Bill would tell him, here's what we're doing. Josh McDaniels called all the offensive plays, but Belichick may say to Josh during a headset series, hey, Josh, stick a run in here. Now, he didn't say run 36 lead. He didn't say run power. He said just stick a run in here. Now, when they're on the break in between the series, he may say, hey, Josh, I think we really need to run some more gap scheme. I think we need to do this. We can't block the three technique, you know, all that kind of stuff.
So in a nutshell, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, it seems like this – like, you don't see a problem with the setup that the Eagles have, just on the surface, like without knowing the details of the behind-the-scenes stuff.
I actually think, I think it's the best setup because I think it finally takes the guy away from looking at his play sheet and seeing the game and evaluating and watching the game, which is so damn important, you know. But what I have a problem with is he goes for it on all the fourth downs. There's no applied analytics. It's just we're going for it. Whereas part of his job is to figure out, you know, part of the other job of the head coach is to figure out who's in control of the game and who's in the lead. And sometimes those two things don't go together.
Yeah.
Like even though New Orleans might have been in the lead in that game, they never were in control of that game, right?
I agree.
You always have to judge that. That's really important, who's in control and who's in the lead. And I think that's the job of the head coach because Vic Fangio is calling defenses. That's what he's doing. And then somebody's got to marry the defensive calls to the offensive calls because – you know, if you're playing less defense and you're not out there and you're having a tough time slowing them down, you know, maybe you might want to run. Like the Bengals, they're 31st in the league in rushing attempts. They don't help their defense at all. They just call passes. Mm-hmm. And so their defense plays way too much.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the actually the most confusing things for us is from a number standpoint, his choice to go for it on fourth down when they ran the fake tush push, that was actually one where the analytic, you know, numbers said kick it, which
that was the right before the half.
I think one of the things we've been wondering is with him, and I, you know, there's no way to know is he doesn't get any credit when they win, truthfully, locally. And when they lose, he gets a lot of blame. And one of the things we sort of wonder is he trying too hard to put sort of an imprint that people know when he's doing something so the conversation around it changes?
I don't get that sense from him. I don't see him trying to be overly egocentric, you know, to try to make people see that he's really involved. I think what Kelsey said today on your station about his preparation for the meeting, I thought was really a glowing endorsement because that's part of his job, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, he needs to do that. That's something that's important. And if Kelsey says it's the best presentation he's ever heard, that's great. Now, you know, I don't know who else he's heard, but I've seen Belichick in front of the team on Wednesday and Thursday, and it's as good as it gets. And same thing with Coach Walsh. And I used to tape Coach Walsh's on Wednesday and Thursday in the morning when he went down there back in the early 80s. So, you know, I think that's really important. But I agree with you. I think, to me, he always gets way too much blame. And I don't know what the analytical people are telling him either. You know, sometimes he's getting data from somebody in there. And, again, I think it's important. But all the data you get to go for it or not go for it is all predicated on 10,000 games that is put in a computer. And if you really study the history of AI versus humans and chess, you know, you see that it took a long time for Big Blue to eventually beat a human in chess because there was no feel for the game. There was no, it was just a lot of numbers based on different variables, different situations where the human has an instinct on how to play the game specifically. And I think that's part of what the analytics misses.
Mike, why do you think this team is struggling down in the red zone? Other than Jalen turning the ball over, I'm just wondering from a play calling standpoint down there and what they want to do. We just aren't as efficient as we should be in the red zone.
I think the whole NFL has problems with the red zone, Ike. I think the problem is there's not enough two-back runs. You know, you can't, you got to run the ball down there to get it in. The people that play coverage, there's a lot, you know, it's harder. Teams don't really try to be physical. There's not enough physicality to get the ball in the end zone. It's hard to throw it in there. Mm-hmm. You know, Andy makes a living in Kansas City running a lot of misdirection. We're going to fake you going this way to separate the defense to bring you back the other way. It's a lot of tricks, you know, because that's kind of how he's been very effective in the red area. You have to displace the defense. But you also have to line up and say, okay, here we come. And it's which Jacksonville's biggest problem. They have no physical toughness as a team. So when they get the red zone, they can't really power you down there. And so Peterson has to call these pass plays. The quarterback can't execute them. And then they don't score touchdowns.
Mm. Talking to Mike Lombardi. Mike, the Bryce Huff numbers went from, you know, rather, our reaction to Bryce Huff went from the numbers aren't there to all of a sudden everyone who watches the tape is like, this guy is getting blocked one-on-one by tight ends. At what point does the team, does a team look at a player they had high expectations for and say, you know what, this guy just isn't who we thought he was. It's not going to work.
Yeah, you know, that's the hard one because there's enough evidence on tape that the guy's a good player. You know, now, look, I think what Vic did last week was really good. I mean, Vic wasn't going to play with Smith and Huff on the edges and let the Saints run their outside zone play. So he played a variation of a five-man line. He played a lot of 6-1, which is what Belichick ran in the Super Bowl, which stymied Sean McVay and the Ram offense. So I think situationally it's going to depend. But here's the thing, too. When you watch tape, right, who are you getting sacks against, right? The Giants made this huge trade for Brian Burns, and I said it on my podcast. Like, if I would have come to Al Davis and said, hey, I want to sign Brian Burns, he would have said, well, how many sacks did he have against the teams in the AFC West? And that's really what the competition is, and I think that's something that you have to look at with Huff. I mean, what level of comp is sacks again? And then, you know, too, I think the way Jalen Carter played inside this week, which is what we expect him to play, mm-hmm. along with Jordan Davis, I think that should help Huff. But if he's, you know, he's getting blocked by tight ends, that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
This team is shorthanded, Mike, this week. Don't know if A.J. or Devontae is going to play Lane. I don't know if he did some limited things today at practice or not, but not sure if he's going to go. What do you think their chances are Sunday down in Tampa?
Well, look, Todd Bowles is a really good coach defensively, you know, and so if Smith and Brown don't go, who's getting the ball? Dallas Goedert, right? So we got to double Goedert and take him out of the game. If Lane can't go and Becton can't go on the right side of the line against a really good front of Tampa. Now, Vita Vey plays, and he practiced yesterday. That's going to help their run defense tremendously because he's almost unblockable when he's going full force. But it's going to be a hard, scrappy game. Look, they didn't play well at all last week against the Broncos, and they were flat. They didn't come out. And I think you're going to get the best effort out of Tampa this week. And they've got big play receivers that can attack the corners. If Eagles' front doesn't show up, they will attack the defensive line. I mean, they will attack the secondary of the Eagles. There's no question. These receivers are legitimate. We know Mike Evans is really good. Godwin's really good. And Baker can make the throws, which caused a lot of problems for teams playing Tampa is Baker's movement. He's run, not to be, you know, like a run like Jalen Hurts runs, but run to make movement, to make plays and throw it down the field.
All right, Mike. Well, this is going to be a tough game on Sunday. I think we're all taking two and two at the bye is okay, but this is a tough one on Sunday. I appreciate your time, man.
They're all tough. Yeah. They're all tough, Spike. I mean, the thing is I think Philly fans expect everything to be easy. Like, we're just going to walk to the Super Bowl. And, you know, iron builds iron. You got to have these hard moments. You got to go through the season. If you're 2-2, the thing with Nick not calling plays, you know, now you find where your team is. Now you make adjustments in which you have to do. And so that's really what allows you to get better and where it counts the most. I mean, last year there was a false narrative about the team. You know, they were playing, but they weren't playing well, but they were winning. And then all of a sudden, the bottom fell out. I think it's more important to really understand your team correctly. And the only way you do that is humble yourself when you lose.
All right, Mike. Well, we appreciate your time, man.
Thank you, brother.
Anytime. I can't believe we did not talk about Embiid's extension. I cannot believe this.
Spike's ducking you with this. Yep. I'm ducking you with the Sixer stuff.
I would love to know how this works. I want to know how it works. I want to know what crystal ball Josh Harris and the Sixers front office looked into.
Dude, they have no choice. They have to give him the extension.
He's going to be healthy. I can't wait to see. I want that crystal ball. I mean,
they have no choice, Mike. They have to give him the contract.
If you have no choice to give out $180 million, what world do we live in? Seriously, what world do we live in?
I wish I was 7 feet tall, 275 pounds. Maybe I'd be big too.
I want to know what, when they ran the numbers on the predictability of health for him to the length of that contract, I would love to know what that number came back.
You know, I'm beginning to think, let me ask you this. In your heart of hearts, if we put you onto a lie detector test and I asked you, would you be happy if Joel Embiid next year played 70 games, won the MVP, and took the Sixers to the finals, thereby proving you wrong, what would you prefer? That you're right about Joel Embiid or the Sixers win a championship?
I want them to win a championship, but here's the fact, and I'm telling you, I'm not wrong. So that's just the fact. I'm not wrong. But
you've been wrong before. Jason Kelce said so.
Yeah, well, 2 years later.
I don't care.
2 years later, they fired him.
That's actually not a bad point. That's not a bad point.
Somebody else agreed with me. It just took 2 years.
Yeah. Ooh, boy.
Well, once the Sixers start, we will block off like 5 minutes of each of these calls for us to go Sixers.
Whether you block it off or not, the subject's coming up.
I know.
We see.
And when he gets hurt, you're going to hear me scream.
I'm well aware. Well aware. All right.
I will have something on my face for sure.
There it is. Right. Lombardi.
Wow.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Midday Show. Hugh Douglas, Joe Gill. You guys with us, 215-592-9490. For joining us in studio right now, as she does every week at this time, is Rhea Hughes. Rhea, how we doing?
Good morning. How are you?
We're good. We're just, you know, talking about the quarterback and the head coach and the Eagles.
Should have taken the three.
Well, of course you should have taken the three. Yes. All right, Rhea, we all agree on that.
Correct.
They should have taken the three.
Because we're bright people.
We get it. There's some people around here. I don't know what's going on. But Rhea, where there's a lot of disagreement is about Jalen Hurts and where he is right now. So we could all look at the numbers. There's been a lot of good. There's also been six turnovers so far. Rhea, Jason Kelce was on The Sporting with you guys, and he said that that Jalen is getting better. And I'm driving, and that struck me because the numbers in a lot of ways say he's getting worse, right? And I think we all see some ways he's improving, but the numbers are worse in a lot of areas. Do you think he's getting better?
What do you mean, the number, the stats?
Stats. So is
a lot of offenses are down this year.
They are. But Jalen from, let's say, 2 years ago, his best year, to last year to this year, interceptions are up, sacks are up, his completion percentage is up this year but down last year, and his passer rating is way down the last couple of years. Do you think he's getting better?
I do. I feel like I'm one of the only people who came out of the game with the Saints feeling positive about it. Because of the, I mean, let's also remember, his number one receiver has been out for two games.
And their best offensive lineman was out in this game.
Mekhi was out, you know, for most of the half. Then you lose Smith. He went like, 7 of 10 for like 150 yards in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, I mean, to your
point. With a pretty impressive quarterback rating.
Yes.
To me, the adversity he faced to be able to, you know, help, obviously, with Goddard and Saquon Barkley, once Kellen Moore remembers that he's on the team. Hugh knows how I feel about Kellen. Yeah,
the best tweets on a Sunday are coming from me. Best text, I should say. They're not
five
tweets.
Five times in the first half. I've definitely seen growth. I really have. I mean, the turnovers, we know he's got to fix that. I feel like I think most of us feel like Smith was probably more to blame for that, but maybe you still don't throw it in that spot.
Right.
The fumble was egregious. Absolutely.
That's the one that you can't get past.
There's no
Hold
excuse for that. I mean, there's no excuse for that. He should know better. But, I think without having his number one receiver and everything that happened in that Saints game in terms of losing people to injuries, having the two turnovers, I feel better about Jalen, certainly, than I want to see how he performs against the Bucks.
And Todd Bowles, yep. That's,
you know,
a test.
That's been his kryptonite. That's really been his kryptonite. And the fact that you're going into a game and you don't have some of your primary weapons.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to be a tough one, man.
It's all going to come to what kind of game plan, because Tampa Bay has allowed 6 rushing touchdowns and I believe 1 passing touchdown so far this season. They got rolled up at home.
By the Broncos.
By the Broncos.
Yeah.
Now, they were without Vita Vea and they were without their tackle. I think the tackle's going to be back. He had a concussion. But, you know, you look at it, the game plan should be a lot of Saquon and a lot of Goddard, basically.
Yeah,
it
should be. And I think the Bucs are kind of a make-believe 2-1, because that game they won, they beat the Lions 2 weeks ago. But
in Washington. Yeah.
But they got outgained by Detroit by like 250 yards and won. That was a kind of a weird win they had. So it is interesting, Ray, because the Eagles are favored in this game on Sunday. Yet you look at it, and we don't know if we're going to have Lane. We might not have Devontae, AJ. It feels like this one's got to be Jalen, protect the ball as best you can, and it's got to be another Saquon game this week.
And I'm looking at it from a different way. From Hugh's favorite thing, defense is a luxury.
It's not anymore.
They've helped you win 2 games, basically.
I know. Hugh's been quiet about it lately.
He has been sacked, Baker Mayfield, 12 times, I believe, in the last 2 games. He is a completely different guy when he's under pressure. So this may be, Hugh, we want a bold prediction on Bryce Huff.
Bryce Huff.
One sack.
I believe
this is the week.
No, I believe in Bryce Huff. He's played in his 18 snaps. He was somewhat productive.
18 snaps.
Just think about what you just said.
I know, real. I said
18
it.
Snaps.
But he needs to learn how to. He set the edge better. He just gets engulfed. I don't understand how all of a sudden he forgot how to pass rush.
Yeah, that's the. It must be that he hasn't picked up the defense yet.
Yeah.
I mean,
because that's the one thing we think he should be able to do. It's just go get the quarterback.
But it's a new system, and Vic, you know, doesn't strike me as a warm and fuzzy guy. So it's
that's fair.
I don't think he's. Yeah. And this is not an indictment on, I guess it kind of is. I don't think he's doing enough to help him adjust.
You have to. I mean, you know the guy can sack the quarterback.
Yeah, you paid him a ton of money. Yeah. I personally feel like Bryce Huff needs to be moved from left defensive end, left outside linebacker to right. I feel like even though he has rushed, I've seen a lot of rushes from that position. Like when he's over there,
sometimes move him around a lot with the Jets?
Yeah, okay. I've seen a couple rushes when he's been on the right side. Okay. But the thing that I'm seeing, Rhea, is that because he got a sack of Jordan Mailata last year.
Okay.
So, but the thing that I'm seeing is he's getting confused with the line as I work with my hands again on radio.
It's my favorite thing.
But what he is doing, he doesn't understand the splits between the tight end, the tackle, and the guard. And he's lining up too wide. Mm. And he's not giving himself a chance on pass rush, in my opinion.
Okay.
It's because he's rushing wide. He doesn't understand where the quarterback's going. He doesn't have special awareness enough to know whether the quarterback's holding on to the ball, pumping it, or is he throwing the ball down the field.
Are they showing him that on the sidelines?
I don't know.
I'm just curious how coached up he's getting.
I don't know. But I think part of it is, too, he's frustrated.
Yeah, well, yeah. 100%.
He's clearly frustrated, but he's not helping. Like, when I watch him line up, he's not helping himself lining up not like 4 or 5 yards outside the tight end. And the tackle's right here, and the guard. Like, you're leaving yourself a wide open space for a run play, or just the distance to the quarterback is just too great. He needs to learn his splits and stop taking on those chip blocks with his whole body.
And I think
it's a lot.
It's easy for us right now to say, no big deal, Brandon will play. But, like, I don't know if Brandon's going to – I hope he does. But it's a lot to ask him to hold up all year playing all these snaps. Like,
not just this
they're going to need Bryce Huff to figure this out.
Did you see the Ruben Frank article today?
It could be another year, Brandon Graham.
Well, he's playing.
I think he's their best pass rusher right now, best edge guy. Yeah. They might need to bring him back.
I told him when I saw him, I said, please don't ever retire.
You can't. They still need him. Yeah. All right, so, Rhea, you hit on something. And I think it adds context to Jalen's numbers and the way he's playing, but also it spins back to our guy Hugh Douglas, who thinks defense is a luxury. Do we think what's happening in the NFL the first 3 weeks is the new NFL? So I have this number in front of me. So we have, last week there were only 38.3 points scored per game among both teams. Like, that's an average of like a 20-18 score. Is the NFL changing, Rhea? Do you think we're seeing something that, because it just feels like it's been a trajectory for 20 years of offense, offense, offense. It feels like it's going backwards
now. They're running a lot more this year. I mean, you're not picking up the chunks, you know, with
the clock is moving more.
Correct. So there's, you know, like, you know, I complain a lot that Saquon only got 5 carries, but they basically didn't have the ball at all in the first quarter.
They didn't.
So you look at the Chiefs. The Chiefs offense doesn't look like any. I mean, you look at Travis Kelce sitting on the sidelines, you know, miserable because, you know, they're getting a lot of help from the officials. They don't need the help. You could stop with that. But it's down across the board. So,
Hugh? You said, I mean, you've told us for years, defense luxury.
It feels like it. Like,
but if these games are 20-18, it's not a luxury.
Defense is a luxury. Our defense
help
is on
that I'm blind.
Back of a milk carton the first 2 weeks. I like the way that they played Sunday.
Not the first half of the Green Bay game.
Okay, the first half they stopped.
Yeah.
But then after that, though, they were on skates.
They were on a mini bye.
They had steering wheels on their back. Guys were getting drove all over the place. Yeah. They played upset. They played with passion this week. They need to do that every week.
He made adjustments.
He did.
But a five-man front help. But technique was the biggest thing that I saw. Like Jordan Davis, Jalen Carter, those guys played with their hands, they were violent. That sounded weird.
No, I'm telling you, it's true,
but it was weird.
Yeah,
Derek Carr was afraid after Jordan Davis. When you see a man that large running
coming at you, a full head of steam,
you don't ever want to see it again. You saw passes. He was throwing passes into the gray. He was not the David Carr. You know, although they're 2-0. He hadn't thrown the ball a ton.
No, well, they got ahead of the sticks. They were running it.
Yeah.
And I told Joe, I was like, I don't know if I trust him throwing the football. Same thing with Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield has looked good these last couple of weeks.
They're similar quarterbacks.
But he's still mortal. He could be made mortal. So, yeah.
I don't know, Hugh. It feels like defense is coming back. It feels like it is,
but it's still not a necessity. It's still not. I think for us, it's been very, very good. I don't know how these cats are going to play.
If Green Bay goes up 14-0, the Eagles probably won't come back in that game.
That was a hell of a stance that they had.
Their two wins, the defense has been very necessary.
And they stopped a team that had scored 91 points in two games.
What happened against Atlanta? You know what they were? They saw Bijan Robinson, the back of his jersey, more than they saw the front.
Well, it was a necessity, and we didn't get it that night.
Yeah, I hear you. But it's still kind of playing out the way that I thought it would.
Even
with that being said, hey, Kyle, I'm going to die on this hill. Even in the Atlanta game, we still had a chance to win. And our beautiful coach, great man, he did what he did towards the end.
Not happy.
Yeah, none of us are.
I'm down this hill. I'm not moving off this rock.
You are going to literally die on this. So, Rhea, we appreciate you hopping in. And hopefully, we get another win to talk about next week. Thank you, Rhea.
Who do we want to play?
In the first round?
Yeah.
The Phillies?
Yeah.
I'll tell you who I don't want to play.
Diamondbacks.
No, it's San Diego.
Really?
The Fathers.
They were 50-50.
They're the best team since
they
the
have
break.
Been
yeah.
41-17 since. I kind of want revenge on the Diamondbacks. I want to see them again. I want to beat them.
No.
You don't want them?
No.
So who do you want?
The Brewers, the Mets, or the Braves?
I wouldn't mind seeing the Braves. Yeah. They're
Braves
a shell of themselves.
Oil. Yeah, they're leaking
they're
oil.
They're a shell of themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz every Wednesday at 4 o'clock. Brian Baldinger joins us, our Odyssey NFL Insider. Insider Call is brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store. Baldy, how are we doing?
I'm doing great. Good to be with you guys, man. Life is good.
Life is good.
Life is good.
So that Eagles defensive performance, I think, not only outstanding, just a complete curveball. I don't think any of us were expecting it. What did you see scheme-wise, if anything, that they did differently on Sunday than they've done previously this year?
Well, I mean, they wanted to stop Clint Kubiak and Alvin Kamara's outside zone, so they stemmed from their base 3-4 defense to taking Zach Bond and putting him up at the line of scrimmage. And basically playing a 6-1 diamond with Nakobe at middle linebacker. And they said to the defensive line, they said, stop catching blocks and go attack the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. So Jalen, Jordan, Booker, Brandon, they attacked the line of scrimmage. And they did not give the outside zone run to Alvin Kamara to the offense. And so if you want to stop the run in this league, it's all about gap defenses. Ike knows this better than anybody. I don't care what defense you play. They're all gap defenses. And they got their heads in the gap, and they penetrated. And, you know, they made Kamara stutter his feet, stop, and he had very few holes. So you go from giving up, you know, 6.5 yards a carry to 2.5 yards a carry. But the late stemming and the shift to Zach Bond, I think, was exactly what they needed to stop that particular run offense.
So the Saints aren't running offense with three wide receivers a lot. So is that something that the Eagles can replicate moving forward doing that, or does that get them into more trouble putting that extra, is that, can they put the extra guy on the line of scrimmage that way in the future?
It does depend on formation.
Yeah.
You know, the Saints are a two-back team. They're a big two tight end team. They're not a big 11 personnel team the way most teams are, the way Tampa is, for example. But, you know, against that look, it was the right move. And they did it, like they had, I counted, they had 13 first down runs, and New Orleans ran for 24 yards on those 13 runs. Mm. So, you know, the big down is, you know, to stop the run, is you got to do it on first down and keep them out of, you know, second and five and second and fours the way Atlanta and Green Bay had them for much of the game in those first 2 weeks. And so it really discouraged them from staying with it, and Kamara never really got it. Now, it helped that they lost their center, you know, in the second series, and they weakened two positions by moving their starting, you know, guard to center. And so that helped a little bit. But nonetheless, it was a good changeup by Vic.
Yeah, I thought Jalen Carter set the tone for this entire game. When you talk about going on the road, hostile environment, and you're the first one throwing the punch. And I thought he was the first one throwing the punch, not literally, but figuratively, and maybe some literally, out there Sunday. Talk a little bit about his play and how important that is going forward for this defense.
You know, I mean, honestly, I mean, he's got great, great potential. He could be as good as any defensive tackle in this league. Mm-hmm. And I saw him before the game. He was with his agent, Drew Rosenhaus. Like, I just felt like he was ready to pop. You know, and, you know, he was suspended for five plays the week before, I'm sure. Like, he wasn't happy about any of that. But he showed up. He destroyed Trevor Penning. He destroyed Cesar Ruiz in every phase, whether it was pass rush, Ike, whether it was, you know, penetrating on the run, mm-hmm. getting off blocks. Like, he just has freaky movement and unusual strength and power. Like, not many guys. Fletcher was a very powerful guy. He didn't have the movement that this guy has. Now, yeah. Fletcher did it every week for a long time, 12 years, whatever. Like, he was a consistent player. Mm-hmm. Like, right now, to me, like, he has to decide, I'm going to do this every week. Like, because he can. But I mean, it's up to him. Like, he has all the potential in the world to dominate on the interior. And I do think he sets the tone for everybody else up there, whether it's Milton or Jordan or Booker or anybody. Like, I do think he sets the tone because he's the most talented player,
yeah.
period. And, you know, you win games with your most talented guys, and he's a guy that can change whatever any team wants to do. I don't care if it's throwing it, running, whatever. He can change the direction that a team wants to go.
Man, you mentioned something that I had mentioned also yesterday about his potential and him reaching it and how it really is up to him making that decision every week, starting in preparation and practice, knowing what to do, practicing a certain way, and then taking it to that game on Sunday. I was fortunate to play with B-Dawg and T.O., two mm-hmm. Hall of Famers right there. I yep. saw the way they practiced. I saw the way they trained. It was different than everybody else. And it's no surprise as to why they were the great players that they were. You lined up across from him, buddy, was your teammate and Reggie, right? You were here with Reggie for a yep. little bit, right?
Yep. I played with Reggie. I played with him and against him.
Mm-hmm. What was that like when you see a person with that level of talent? Like, what – and from your point of view, explain what that's like to watch that type of greatness on a regular basis.
Well, you know, you don't want to be on the highlight reel of Reggie, you know, humping you. Right? You know, that's the first thing. You don't want to be on the highlight reel. I remember my brother was playing right tackle in Kansas City 1 year, and I just told him, look, this is what Reggie wants to do, and if you overset, you're going to be thrown right off the screen. And, like, he literally was in panic mode the night before, and I had a good game against him, but that's one. You don't want to be embarrassed, you know, mm-hmm. by Reggie. And, you know, number two, you know what kind of potential he has. And so if your techniques aren't perfect, if you don't have a game plan play to play, if you're not in the right spot, you're going to look bad. And I think the same thing is with Jalen. Like, he has that ability. Trevor Penning looked terrible. He looked serviceable the first 2 weeks. I think the late stemming bothered the Saints, and I think that's something that will bother any offensive line. It kind of disrupts the run game blocking assignment sometimes. But, you know, just from a talent standpoint, anybody that watches Jalen Carter's game last week and you're playing against him this week, you know, you're, you know, in Tampa right now, you know, you're looking at that that talent. You're looking at him just come through the inside shoulder because he's a skilled pass rusher. He's going to get to your edge. He knows how to adjust. He can spin. He's got all the counters. So you got to stay in front of that guy. Cody Mock is the right guard for Tampa. Like, that guy's the second-year player. He's witnessing the type of power because he goes up against Vita Vea every day. So that's the type of power that you're talking about here. Yeah. And you've got a short set. You can't give them much of a runway. They're going to walk you right back to the quarterback.
Baldy, over to the offense. After a couple of weeks of screaming for Dallas Goedert, they definitely found him. Is that as simple as deciding that you're going to make him a focus? Is that all they did to get him free the way that he got free?
Well, you know, New Orleans plays a lot of man coverage. You know, they did on the big splash 61-yard catch. You know, they caught him on a rub route in the middle of the field. And, you know, the Saints ran into each other. I don't know why they're in that coverage. You know, it's 3rd and 16. I don't understand it. But, you know, they play a ton of man coverage. And so they had their man beaters up. And, you know, it certainly, you know, helped them that, you know, A.J. was on the sideline. Devontae went out. Covey went out. I mean, he was the go-to guy, you know. And so they had to call his number. And that's one of the reasons why he had the numbers that he had. But, you know, they play a ton of man coverage. And he's good against, you know, he's good, period. But, you know, he got featured basically like, you know, you're throwing a Paris Campbell. I mean, some of the guys out there, I'm sure, you know, Johnny Wilson, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I know who I'd be looking at if I was the quarterback.
For sure.
Some of those other guys are out there.
Speaking of the quarterback, I guess just a general, you know, view from you on the game that Jalen had and the turnover issue that keeps popping its head up.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, look, look, Tyrann Mathieu has 35 career interceptions. No safety has more. The guy is a thief. You know, I mean, he's sitting back here in cover two. It's not a great route at all by Devontae. It's no excuse. You're throwing it, it's third down. You got a field goal. You don't have to throw it there. There's no doubt you don't have to throw it there. There's a lot of things you can do. But, you know, he's your go-to guy right here. You know, Tyrann wanted the ball more than he did. He beat him to the spot. I didn't think he should have thrown it there. The fumble, I mean, look, the offensive line is playing great. At some point, you're just holding it too long, and you can't carry it like that. They've got one legit pass rusher, and he knocked the ball out of his hands in New Orleans right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's you just can't be careless like that. There's times when you're going to lose a fumble. You're going to be in the pocket. You're going to be throwing it. You know, some elite rusher, T.J. Watt, whatever, is going to get – it's going to happen. But that's – I thought that was very careless. And, you know, he's got to – and it's on him, and he knows that. And you have to – you know, you got to get in his face and, like, you got to have two hands on that ball when you're breaking a pocket like that. Plus, you know, he was already at the 5-second count of holding the ball. So, you know, you got to know that clock in your head. Somebody's going to get to you pretty soon.
This game in Tampa winnable?
Absolutely, but I mean, I think, you know, they've lost a lot of games down there. I know Lane Johnson, you know, hadn't won a game there in a while.
Yeah.
So, you know, you go in there thinking, it's about time to win one. Now, Denver went back there, you know, went down there and beat them last week, and they beat them, you know, in every which way. They got the ball to the wide receivers. They played great defense, and they shut Baker down. You know, you just watch last week's game, and you're like, yeah, it's beatable. But you watch Tampa the week before in Detroit, and you're like, that's a really good football team. So they've got two elite receivers, you know, and Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Baker loves to feed them. And this rookie, Jalen McMillan's a really good player. So, you know, and the offense line had played better until last week. So it's improved. They got a good center in there now, first-round pick. They've got good personnel. They play pass defense about as well as you could play pass defense. And they've been playing without some starters, but their corners – They challenge you now. They challenged Jared Goff. They challenged Bo Nix last week. Like, they're sticky and covered. So if you're going to win, you're going to have to beat good, tight coverage. I know that.
All right, Baldy. Appreciate you. Baldy joins us every Wednesday at 4 o'clock. Thank you, man.
Appreciate it, brother.
Yep. You got it, guys. Take care, man.
There he is, Odyssey NFL insider Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast.
The Phillies got the bye Thursday morning, and the Eagles got the Bucks coming up in 3 days. Good morning to you. Joe DeCameron and John Ritchie. We got Ruben Amaro in studio. We got Rhea. We got Seltzer. We got Jason Kelce, as he is every single Thursday at this time, brought to us by his company,
hey.
Garage Beer. Get yourself some Garage Beer. Jason, let's talk about your transition to broadcasting. So it's been a couple weeks now, mainstream broadcasting, let's call it.
Yeah.
You know, you know the podcast and the whole thing for some years now. But the Monday Night Football gig and that, what has it been like for you, and what has surprised you doing these first couple weeks?
I don't know what surprised me, because I didn't go in with too many preconceived notions about what to expect, but I think just the amount of football you have to watch. I mean, when you're preparing for an opponent and you're going to, you know, the NovaCare Complex every day and you're watching tape, that's way different than, you know, watching multiple games, you know, hopefully every game, and all the games of the teams that are playing that week. It is a lot of football games to watch and keep track of. There's definitely an immense amount of respect for people that are doing this, have done this for a long time. The guys that I'm on set with, I've really leaned on them to like help me, because it's hard. It's hard to really be able to, you got to come in there with energy. You got to come in there with the right mindset. And when it's live, you have to be able to offer something of substance in that moment. When you're podcasting, mm-hmm. I can just mess around with my brother. In a span of 2 hours, we're going to get some interesting stuff. We're just talking. right? It's going to happen. And I go on enough tangents that helps. But I think that the doing that on a Monday Night Countdown, a structured show with commercials, you get a certain segment in there. Yeah, but at the same time, you kind of have to go with wherever it's going. It's been fun to be a part of, and also humbling for sure.
Jason, does it feel like you're at a disadvantage because you've been playing? I mean, I know that sounds crazy, but the other guys that you're on set with,
yeah.
they've been talking about yeah. the game every year for the last several years. You were out there playing. Yeah. You weren't worried about formulating, you know, ideas to talk about, comparing teams and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it set you back a little bit? Like you're playing yeah, catch up back, now. Yeah.
I think being recently out of football definitely has disadvantages of not having experience and really understanding what the viewer wants to hear, like different even just like phrases and things like that, I think that go a long way. I think that it offers a lot of advantages of stories, timeliness. You know, I just played this coordinator last year. I know he likes this, totally. This, and this. Like, there's definitely advantages to it.
Everyone wants to hear that.
No question.
But
no
there's
question.
Certainly the disadvantages are that I've never done this before, and I don't know what I'm doing. I'm out there winging it on a national spotlight with a bunch of other guys that thankfully do know what they're doing. But I also I'm still transitioning also to thinking about the player thinking about the game from an analyst role, not a player role. And like Ryan got me last week, like, you know, I'm watching Jacksonville play and like, man, if they can just improve on third down in the red zone, like the offense could actually be pretty good. And Ryan's like, yeah, but they're not good on third down in red zone. So they're bad. And I was like, yeah, but so I still think of it in terms of like, hey, let's do this, this, and this better. We'll be a better team, as opposed to like, what are they right now? And yeah. just look at it there. And wow. it was a
face
good moment
value.
For me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you, yeah. John, I think you do the
I
same
make
thing.
That, it is hard
frequently.
To break that habit. Yeah, yeah. You see that and you assume that they will continue to work on these things because clearly they should.
right.
And it'll just get better.
So, yeah. Jason, what I always tell John, I mean, amongst other things, well, the other 31 teams are working on it also. So, like, you know, it's not a one team.
Right.
Whatever I'm trying to say. This yeah. is not a science experiment with only one constant.
Yeah, if we only do better against the Blitz, we'll be much yeah. better at the end of last season.
All right, let's go to the phones.
Unfortunately, it never happened.
Mixing in some calls with Jason here with us for about an hour. Let's talk to Randy calling from Delaware. Hi, Randy.
Hey, how you doing, the cantaloupe? How you doing today?
Let me tell you something.
Oh, wow.
It's a falsity. It was not I with that cantaloupe. It's my roommate.
I know, but I say that every time I call you, buddy.
I like it, Randy. I don't think Joe likes it.
Well, it's a little uncomfortable. You're getting accused of improper
of hollowing out
inappropriate
a cantaloupe
relationship
yeah,
with a cantaloupe.
Yeah,
improper usage.
In the words of Bill Clinton, I did not have sexual relations with that cantaloupe.
You said
that's
your
exactly
quote,
what Bill said.
Roommate heated it up in the microwave.
Yeah, he did. All right, Randy, what yeah. do you got for us?
Wow,
Jason's like, what the hell is happening
yeah.
right now?
Yeah, I mean, we all
have, heated it.
We all some stories from college. We'll leave those there.
Yeah, right.
All right, Randy, go ahead, buddy.
Jason, man, I'm looking at the Eagles D line, and I'm pretty excited about having Jalen Carter on our team. I think he's got that, in Nick Sirianni words, that dog mentality. And I wouldn't want to be standing across from him when he's heated up in the middle of a game. Just watching him, he comes off firing off the ball, nuts. So if we could just, and I'm the same way. When it comes to my way of thinking, Jason, I'm more about the team. It was my job. It takes a team effort, and I'm constantly trying to think of something that's gonna better the team. So, you know, I can get that. I just think that we need to get somebody on this edge and get somebody coming off the ball to get to this quarterback. That's our biggest thing.
Yeah, it's a fair criticism. I think Jalen Carter was. If you look at the Atlanta game and last game, what happened in Atlanta? He played one of the best guards in the league, an all-pro in Chris Lindstrom, and Chris Lindstrom did a good job against him. And Jalen had his moments as well, but that neutralized Jalen Carter. And right now, so much of what's flourishing on that D-line is caused because of Jalen Carter. And when you're kind of handcuffed to one guy, like if I'm an opposing offensive line coach, I am trying to take Jalen Carter out of the game, and I'm doing that structurally, I'm doing that in four down with calls and things like that. I'm going to do everything I can to not give that guy one-on-one matchups with people.
Jason, is that part of why he gets frustrated and starts yelling at people in the stands? I mean, does that add up by the end of a game where you're getting doubled and tripled?
Well, I know Aaron Donald used to get really pissed when we would double team him. Like, Aaron, I'm not going to let you ruin the game. Like, what do you think? Why would I leave you one-on-one with a guard? You're the best player in the world. So
you guys handled him so well through those.
I'm serious. Yeah, we put two people on him. It was the best thing ever.
No, I know, but
other even but other teams did too. Yeah, no, but other teams didn't. There's structural things that we would do that other teams wouldn't go that far.
Gotcha.
Like there's five down fronts where it's like everybody in the world. If you put a five, and I think it's whatever. Everybody in the world puts a five down front up. It's going to be a man call and a six man protection. It's going to be mano a mano. If Aaron Donald's there, we're like, no, we'd rather have the back block the defensive end than let this guy have a one-on-one matchup. We feel better with that.
That's taking a chance.
I think that is where we went further with it to really neutralize him because we felt like he was that big of a game record.
That's something.
So I think that Jalen is not at that level yet, but he's going to see these double teams. He's going to see the slide going his way. You need other guys. BG, when he's gotten his minimal reps, has still looked like the same guy that he's always been.
Yeah.
Josh Sweat looks great at times. They really need to get Huff going, and I don't know what the answer to that is. I think that it just seems like he's a little bit lost at times, and he just isn't in a rhythm, and sometimes maybe designing games where he can hit things at full speed, blitzes where he can slant in and use his speed to his advantage. I thought he did better setting the edge this week in the run game. Like, you can tell he wants to improve, but still hasn't had the production as a pass rusher.
Hey, Randy, give me an answer. What's only happened one time?
Well, right quick. Can I say something to Jason right quick?
Sure.
Jason, I wanted to thank you. I'm the guy you texted that was having some mental health issues, veteran.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I want to jump on here and thank you for that, brother. You helped me out. I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Randy.
That was straight up crazy, crazy cool, man. Kind of, I was doing crazy stuff that I wouldn't realize. And when I got a message from Jason Kelsey, I kind of snap out of it. You know what I mean? So I really appreciate what you did, man.
Of course.
Randy, God bless you, man. That's an amazing story there. Randy, what only happened one time?
Only happened one time.
Yeah, this is for Kevin Hart tickets.
Ooh.
Kevin Hart tickets. What only happened one time? I only fell in love one time with my wife.
That's a great answer.
There you go.
That's a great answer. Now, other people have fallen in love.
Yes, I've only fallen in love with my life one time.
We need to clip that out so we can send that over.
Holy mackerel. That was something. Jason, what's something that only happened one time that's really notable?
Oh, my.
Like, here, some of the answers we heard today. D.B. Cooper, the only time someone hijacked a plane and never got caught. Like, ultimately, the plane's got to land somewhere. You know, obviously, other than September 11th, different scenario.
Yeah.
But like, you know, at some point, you're going to get the guy that tried to hijack a plane.
Yeah, I didn't know that anybody had gotten away.
That guy jumped out of the plane.
In a parachute.
They never found him. Okay, so you got that guy. There was smallpox, which is the only disease ever eradicated. These are some heavy answers. What is something... Now, by the way, non-sports. Now, let's say Eagles win the Super Bowl. That's
a good one. It's probably my favorite.
Me too, buddy. Me too.
Yeah. Now that Randy took.
It's a hard one, man.
Yeah.
Randy.
That might be too much.
No, it's good. I think I would say one time. We have only... Can't say sports.
You're killing them with the non.
Let me play Nick Sirianni audio real quick.
While you think about that. Yes.
Let's go back to yesterday, because John, we're all trying to figure out the Sirianni thing, his role. He gave an answer yesterday, more clarity, but also to me, it's like a slightly more confused because I just don't know exactly where the lines are drawn. Here's Sirianni yesterday, his role in the offense, his role with the team. Here's Sirianni yesterday.
I'm still in there and still, you know, I think, you know, in the past, it's, you know, it's been kind of going through the game plan and saying, hey, we're going to do this, 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 and this. And then in these scenarios, sitting in there listening a little bit more, not running the ship as far as like, hey, I'm driving. We're gonna talk about this. I'll lead the direction of the conversation. It's more now. I'm sitting passenger seat, listening to the conversation, adding my information. Again, I'm not gonna be shy to say, hey, here's what I think in this scenario, or here's what I think in that scenario. But it is more, you know, I'm letting Kellen run drive the car.
You know, I gotta tell you,
I wish he would just stop answering these
you
things.
You think he should stop?
I wish these things would stop being asked. Like,
but we asked
it is an impossible thing to describe.
Yeah.
What he's being asked to describe. Yeah. This is like, okay, so you're overseeing everything, Nick. Like, I really don't think this is fair to Nick.
Well,
and I'm not a huge Nick fan. I think that this is an impossible ask.
So here's
Nick.
Tell us
with exacting description,
right?
What you do.
Well, here's the thing. So Jason, here's where it got more complicated this week. And John's right. He's talked a lot, and maybe he should stop answering it. I don't know. But where it got complicated is he obviously overruled Kellen Moore on the play. And we had wondered, does Nick have the authority to call a play this year? And what we found out
is yes.
Is the answer is yes.
Yeah, and I first of all, I don't know that he overruled Kellen.
Maybe let's put it this way. He called the play.
He made the play. And I think Nick is in charge of certain situations. Right, like that's what your main job is as a head coach, and in these critical situations, whether it's timeouts taken, game management, fourth down decisions, that's where he is spending all of the time allocated towards what these analytics are, what the metrics are, what's the right decision in those specific ones. And I think that that's what he means with those moments when he's talking about taking over play calling. And I think that like that probably happens on defense too, knowing when to call timeouts and everything. This isn't like has to do with offense, but and I feel for him with like trying to describe what you do, because really his job is to organize everything. He's making all of the decisions on what these guys do, what they're in charge of, what the offense looks like, what the defense looks like. He's overseeing all of it. Like, what does a CEO do? I don't know what a CEO does, but I know that they're in charge of facilitating the entire organization's stance in all of these different facets. That's what Nick Sirianni does. And he makes critical decisions when it means the most. And I think, by and large, he gets those really, really right sometimes. There's some, like this last week, where it's like, man, I don't know if that was the right one. But I think that he's, by and large, very good at clock management and fourth down decisions.
Let's do two final things here, Jason. We appreciate you being in here for an hour. Two final things. We had a poll yesterday, audience, thousands of people voted. Do you believe in Nick Sirianni as the Eagles head coach? Like a simple question, take it where you will. Mm-hmm. Do you believe in him, yes or no? More people said no than yes. You've been a big advocate of him since the beginning.
Yeah.
What is it that you see that we don't see as much that gives you more belief in Nick than many other people
have? Yeah, well, I see him every day where I did, right? I have a personal relationship with the guy, and you see his investment in the team. You see his willingness and ability to make the team better regardless of what's at stake, whether it's personally for him. It might not even be the best interest in him, the way he answers a question in the media, the way he gives up play calling, all of these things that he's done in the past and is still doing shows me that he has an accountability to the team to do what's in the best interest of those guys. He truly loves his players, and he is doing the best he can in trying to make the team better. And I think that by and large, he's doing a great job of that over his entire tenure. Obviously, last year, we struggled. We struggled big time on offense and defense. We replaced coordinators. We replaced one coordinator in the middle of the season. Yeah. And everything that happened with players gone and coaches in didn't work. But I think that he's had a very successful tenure. And I think that a lot of that comes down to his competitiveness, his desire to be the best coach he can be and improve. And he's continuing to do that. And I saw that on a day-to-day basis. You see it as he, I don't want to say cover, the way he answers questions in the media, guys respect that. And then he also keeps guys accountable. I'm not messing with, I'll say this wholeheartedly. He's the best team meeting coach I've ever been around.
Wow.
Like, and I wasn't with Bill Belichick. I know Bill
because
would do similar things.
Because he held your
attention? Yeah. Well, and I was also young with Andy, so I wasn't like evaluating Andy Reid as a head coach in team meetings. Like, I was just like, whatever you want me to do. I'm a first-year player, right? Like, I'm not in that mold at that point in my career. Hmm. But no, he would hold guys accountable. He's showing plays. He's showing what you did well and pointing it out and celebrating it. And he's showing where we need to improve at and what went wrong in the game. And he's putting his name up there. He's putting my name up there. He's putting defensive players' names up there.
And it's not out if they deserve it.
And it's not like a calling out. It's just like, hey, we're being accountable here. We need to improve this. And like, there's something about that happening in a team meeting when everybody's watching that it means a lot more. There's a level of openness that, okay, everybody is seeing that the D-line struggled in this, right? Because when it doesn't happen in the team meeting, like, everybody kind of knows it, but it's not apparent. Like, now we're going to show this. We're going to show somebody losing a one-on-one in a practice in front of the whole team. So,
and that's
you're
going to
go out there the next day.
Yeah.
You want to be embarrassed in front of all your peers
right
in the next meeting? So I think he does a lot of things really well. He's certainly not perfect, but I just really have appreciated those aspects of him.
Do you think that players, because he is holding practices that are 45 minutes, you know, that is kind of nice. You know, you guys are appreciative of that side.
Correct.
He is kinder, gentler. Mm-hmm. Does that influence the way you feel about Nick because he's easy?
I think that regardless of whether a coach is, I guess, I don't like kinder or gentler. There's all coaches have their own way of coaching. I have seen Jim Washburn say some things to D linemen that I'm like, you couldn't say today. Like, I saw him say stuff I saw him say stuff to D. Iman where, like, dude, that's like, what are you doing right now? Guys loved him, and they would have run through a brick wall for Jim Washburn. It more comes down to, at the end of the day, does the player feel like this guy really cares about me, and does he want the best out of me? And however you get to that. Now, I don't think that people just like Nick Sirianni because the practices are easy. I don't think that at all. I think that, and this year they're not. They've been practicing harder this year than they ever have under his tenure. And the guys want to improve at the game. They might hate practicing hard at times, but at the end of the day, people want to get better. And when the coach is doing it with the right intentions and he's genuine and it's not some show, which I've seen as well, which that's way more annoying. A guy going up in front of a team and ripping people, if it's deserved and it makes sense and it's true, very seldom is that an issue. When it's an issue is a guy's going up there and ripping somebody when he made a bunch of other mistakes, or he's doing it to like somehow like elicit some response. That's when it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways.
Jason, we love having you on the show.
Awesome.
We really do. Let me remind everyone, Garage Beer, get it. It's Jason's company. It's beer. So Jason Kelce plus beer equals you. Drink it. The garage is always open. Light beer like it used to be. Find Garage Beer at your local retailer or online at garagebeer.com. Official beer of the Kelce brothers and dads everywhere. Thanks, Jason. Stay well, bud.
Thanks. I guess I just found my first, happens only one time.
What is it?
You become a dad.
Ah, there you go.
Becoming a dad.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is that fair? Yeah. I don't know.
That's a big one.
You become a multiple dad, but you only become a dad once.
Well done. There he is. Great Jason answer. Kelce. We appreciate it, Jason. Stay well.